everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is going to be a feathery friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful seagull. Now, for the sake of shortening the intro for future episodes, we are going to be moving the episode dedications along with how to submit your animal facts to the end of the show. Now, some intro for this show is absolutely necessary, and so if you want completely intro-free episodes, you'd have to go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts, where we just get right into it. So for those of you that are long-time listeners, the format is going to be a little bit different as we continue to fine-tune the show and make it as enjoyable for everyone as possible. A huge shout-out to George Vlad, who provided the ambiance in this episode. His work is linked in the description, and I encourage you to go check him out. If you are a new listener, I welcome you with open arms to our animal podcast family. And if you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. I have three primary exhortations for you. The first thing I encourage you to do is to put on a pair of flip-flops or sandals, because we are certainly going to be needing those for where we are going today. And my second exhortation, which is arguably the most important, is for you to realize where you are carrying some tension. It could be in the neck, even in the face, the arms, the legs. Regardless of where that tension is, my exhortation to you is the same. Do your best to relax whatever it is that you are tensing. If you're not sure what that is, you can start from the bottom of your feet and just work your way up to your head in your mind, kind of relaxing as you go. You can bring up in your mind some jello and do your best to become the jello. And the third thing I encourage you to do is to give your mind permission to wander and journey with me as we go onto the beach where the seagull resides. The beach is one of my favorite places in the world. If you have ever sifted through the sand with your hands, you would notice just how small those little granules of sand are. And here they are, too many granules to count, that come together to deliver this serene experience, creating that soft and cushiony landing as we walk around on the beach. And usually, on our adventures, I'm a little bit more specific as to where we are going. For example, we could have gone to a beach in California, maybe a beach in Ontario or somewhere else. But this seabird is found pretty much all over the planet, even in Antarctica. And so I figured, rather than go into a place that maybe only a few of you have been to, we can simultaneously take a trip to each of the places that you hold dear, and so you can imagine a favorite beach of yours that you have actually been to. Except instead of it being absolutely crowded by people, it is just us and the seagull. So as we mentioned before, there are many places where the seagull resides. Besides the obvious islands and coasts, they also inhabit deserts and even terrestrial habitats. This seems unintuitive. After all, they are called seagulls, and so why would they be located far away from the water? Well, it seems that they are quite the little adaptable creature. Seagulls are also known by another name, which is just gulls, and their scientific name is Larinae. There are 54 species of gulls that are broken down into 10 genera. The words species and family and genus or genera, when we're talking about multiple, these are all parts of a taxonomic system basically a system of classifying animals that puts them into categories. We as human beings love things neat and tidy, and so having these classifications is extremely important for research and reference, especially when you have more than 50 species of gull. There's going to be differences, some of them less profound, some of them much more so. The smallest seagull, for example, can reach 11.5 inches in length and weigh only 4.2 ounces. But the larger species can reach up to triple the length, about 30 inches, and 3.8 pounds of weight. But despite all the differences, perhaps in coloration and size and weight, they are going to have many commonalities. Seagulls, or gulls, are going to have bulky bodies, long legs, long wings, those special webbed feet, and stout bills that end in a hook. They are equipped with a small claw about halfway up their lower legs that allows them to roost on high ledges without falling right off. Kind of a preventative measure. We just learned on the last episode, the cat, that they have this kind of little claw that allows them to grip bark and trees better. The seagull has something that's comparable, except they use this small claw to not fall off when they are roosting up on high. The plumage or the feathers of the seagull are going to differ from species to species, but they are typically covered in gray, white, and sometimes black. It is the color of the head, however, that varies the most between species, but it is usually some kind of white or black. All of the seagull species, except three, have rounded tails. It is the Sabine's gull, the Ross's gull, and the swallow-tailed gulls that have different ones. Sabine's gull and swallow-tailed gulls have forked tails, while the Ross's gull has a wedge-shaped tail. And so here we see why those specific categories are important, because while they are a part of the same family, they can have quite a few differences. And you'll notice here on the beach, just like every other time you have seen seagulls, they enjoy living in large colonies. It is not too frequently that we will run into just one seagull. I think all of us have done some sort of experiment at one point or another, where we throw a French fry or an onion ring, and all of a sudden, this one seagull becomes 30. And they all want the good stuff. Just like any other species that lives in large groups with others, seagulls have a nuanced communication system, basically having different calls for different things, one to demonstrate aggression, another to identify a threat to the group, another for finding partners in mating, and if you have been on the beach with seagulls before, you have certainly heard some of these calls. These animals are very intelligent. They have picked up a kind of bad name for themselves, carrying with them that burden of being a pest, because many of us and many families, when going on vacation, will be visited by these little aerial mafias, groups of seagulls that demand your French fries, almost as if they are the ones you have to pay the toll to enjoy their beach. And it is often the case that once an animal is considered a pest in a social sense, people out of some kind of retaliation attribute to them stupidity. But in the case of the seagull, this simply isn't true. It just so happens that they use their intelligence to extort unknowing beachgoers. In a natural sense, when they get mollusks, which are hard-shelled, they will take them and drop them onto rocks so that they can break open. When hunting little earthworms, they will stamp their feet on the ground in order to mimic rainfall, an incredible little deception that allows them to eat on earthworms who are buried deep in the soil. And apart from the beach, you may have noticed that many seagulls hang out around bridges, kind of hovering and flying above them. Well, the reason they do this is because those paved roadways garner a lot of heat from the sun and radiate it outwards, And so for the seagull, flying over these ridges and roads is like their version of huddling around a campfire for warmth. They'll even use breadcrumbs that they have found lying around to attract fish. All of these hunting techniques and survival techniques they will pass along to their offspring, allowing them to adapt to their environment over and over. Now you know that when you gave them that French fry and they flew away with it without eating it, maybe they used it as bait to catch fish. These animals truly have grit. They are quick adapters to their environment, which in our modern age is constantly changing, and they use their great intelligence to take food from other birds, from other animals, and of course from us. Such is their grit to survive that they will sometimes even eat younger members of their own species. That phenomenon in which an animal eats a member of its own species is called cannibalism. Seagulls are apt swimmers, flyers, and walkers. They can do it all. Many other seabirds have an easier time flying than walking because of their body proportions, their wingspan, their weight, and some other factors. Many of them are quite clumsy, having to do a waddle or skip or jump, but the seagull is superior to other seabirds in this way. This does not mean that seagulls are as good on land as they could be. They still conform to a certain walking pattern, that being a sort of side-to-side motion, but they are pretty free in the air, being able to hover and take off quickly without much need for a runway. Their ability to maneuver decently on land with their little webbed feet is what makes it possible for them to live anywhere else other than by the sea. Seagulls, like other seabirds we have covered on the show already, are able to drink both fresh and salt water. Me and you are only able to drink fresh water. We can drink salt water after it has been desalinated, but just how it is, we cannot. And the reason the seagull can is because they have a special gland near their eye that acts as a desalinator. A little mechanism that removes the excess salt from their system. If we had such a thing, we could drink salt water too. Seeing as that seagulls will eat pretty much anything, they are omnivorous. They have a wide range of prey that includes fish, marine and freshwater invertebrates, amphibians, reptiles, rodents, plant materials, your French fries, your onion rings, anything you hold dear, etc. As we've learned, they are adaptable and will do whatever it takes to survive. The seagull itself, however, is not free from predation. Other birds of prey like eagles, falcons, and hawks are obvious ones. They can even be preyed upon by sharks if they get the chance. Seagull eggs and young seagulls are most likely to be preyed upon by raccoons, foxes, cats, minks, and those birds of prey. The seagulls in this case can't do much to defend themselves in terms of harm. What they can do is go after their predators in groups and try to scare them away, basically batting their wings and flapping their feet. I think it would do a great deal to scare me away, at least. These creatures, just like many other birds, are monogamous, meaning they mate for life and with one partner. They are good parents to their own young, with both of them taking turns incubating the eggs and feeding them and protecting them until they fly off on their own. Seagulls are also migratory. This means that they will change location seasonally, typically moving to warmer areas during the winter time. How they migrate in terms of the distance differs between species, some traveling very far and some just dispersing around their breeding grounds. They also have excellent vision along with a pair of eyes that is quite unique among birds. Not for the quality of their vision, but because they are one of the few birds with eyes that can actually move around in their sockets. They can turn their head and move their eyes. And now let's move to the name of the creature, gull, What does it mean or where does it come from? We can find this word being used in the early 15th century, and it probably traces back to Celtic origin. In Welsh, Cornish, and Breton, all of them have a very similar construction, and they all ultimately come from an old Celtic word, one that I am not even going to attempt to pronounce. And so there is not much in terms of a direct lineage to Latin or Greek, but only to old Celtic. That is pretty cool. And now for the obligatory dad joke of the episode. Prepare yourselves for this one. Maybe you've already heard of it before. Why do seagulls fly over the sea? Because if they flew over the bay, they would be bagels. See, now that is actually just a good joke. I have to say, I enjoyed that one. That one didn't seem to well up in me any kind of emotional distress, something that I've become accustomed to in reading the jokes. It is perhaps the case that this joke is a little too good. But anyways, let's move to the review of the episode, coming from Airman Mom, writing all the way from the United States of America. Airman writes, "Your podcast is one of my favorites. Not only do you share countless facts, your presentation is so unique. Well done." Thank you, Airman Mom, for that wonderful review. I am very grateful that you consider this podcast to be one of your favorites. If there is anything I could say about this show, it would be that it is idiosyncratic in its presentation. The reason I haven't found any other show that does it is because I completely made it up, but you guys seem to like it, and so I continue. If the show helps you at all, leaving a review like Airman Mom did is one of the biggest ways that you can give back. It only takes a minute or two, and it could be the reason someone else finds the podcast. Your review could be one that makes the show better. And so I encourage your feedback. This episode, of course, was a very special listener episode dedicated to Ashley, who wrote in for the seagull. I hope you enjoyed your episode. I hope you enjoyed learning about them as much as I did. If you would like to request an animal for the show, you can do so by going to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and clicking on the Submit and Animal Request tabs. If you would like to reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can do so by sending an email to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com or by sending a message to relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. If you haven't already followed the show or become a subscriber of it on whatever platform you listen, I encourage you to do that too, because it really helps. And for more Relax with Animal Facts, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. A huge shout out to George Vlad for the ambiances contained within this episode. It is because of his work that we can travel to these places together. His YouTube is linked in the description, and I encourage you to go check him out. The facts used in this episode come from onekindplanet.org, softschools.com, sonoranresorts.mx, birdspikesonline.co.uk, animalcorner.org, and etymonline.com. Those are also in the show notes for your exploration. What an amazing animal we have covered today. Again, one of those underdogs, those animals that we know as common and as ordinary, but they have so much underlying that we have not appreciated yet, well, perhaps before this episode. And I am so glad that you took the time to join me on this adventure together. I look forward to learning about the next animal on the next episode. Take care.